Welcome back to our second segment of Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke, filling in for Rick Allen. We're brought to you by Lassila Insurance in Mohawk, and we appreciate their sponsorship of Copper Country Today here on our three radio stations. Talking with William Cook from Michigan Tech, he has come back to the Copper Country and is going to try to get us all in shape, and I'm thinking that's going to be a really big job, so this is going to be an interesting discussion. Mr. Cook, welcome to the program. Are you William or are you Bill?
William, when I do something official, but Bill, okay. We can go by either one. We'll go with Bill today, I guess.
We'll go with Bill today, because I think I'm afraid when you talk about your catchphrase is move more, eat less.
Right.
I'm afraid I'm the poster child of what you're aiming at here. I work too much. I eat too much. I don't do a whole lot of stuff. What is this all about? This is connected with the Portage Health Foundation, your position here.
I'll say something briefly about that. I was enticed back to the Copper Country after having lived in San Antonio, Texas for the last 14 years with this wonderful position. It's a Portage Health Foundation endowed professor position. I'm officially in the Department of Kinesiology, Health, and Nutrition, and my background is in exercise physiology and specializing in cardiovascular physiology. But another portion of this position is community outreach and working with various health organizations here in the four counties of the Western Upper Peninsula to really tackle some of the issues that folks are dealing with, and one that we step outside the door and you can see right away that we're overweight, we're obese. It's difficult to maintain a healthy body weight. So yeah, my catchphrase really is eat less, move more, because it sounds simple.
Oh, it does sound simple. It sounds as simple as could be, but it's not that simple, we'd all do it.
Yeah, exactly. We talk about in our physiology courses the first law of thermodynamics, which is you can't create energy, you can't destroy energy, you can only transfer energy.
Sure.
So when you talk about body mass, the equation really is simple. It's calories in is how much energy are you taking in, and calories out, how much energy are you expending with your metabolism, your chemical processes, expending as heat and things like this. If you expend more energy than you take in, your body mass decreases, and if you take in more than you expend, it increases. So I think most people know that.
But it's still not easy to do.
As an exercise specialist, we can tackle both of these areas, the move more and the eat less. But people always ask me, what is the best exercise to lose weight? You look on TV and you see all of these different – this one burns more calories. This one is more efficient and whatever. And I always,
We're going to roll. Yeah, we're going to step. Yeah. We're going to walk. We're going to run.
And my answer is always the same. It's what do you like to do? So if you like to run, running is best for you. If you like to walk, walking is best for you, because the goal, the key to this move more is consistency. And even as an exercise specialist, there's days I don't enjoy going to the gym. My primary thing is weight training. I enjoy doing that. But some days I just want to sit on the couch and eat Doritos and watch football. But I know that's not going to help me with my goals. So I'm probably 20 pounds overweight right now, and I know what to do. So no, it's not easy. So there are some strategies. And the first strategy I would suggest to folks is really take control of your own physical activity and just find something you enjoy doing. If it's walking a dog or riding bikes with your kids or whatever, do it consistently. That's one part of the equation.
Now, here's a problem then that we encounter here. And I'm interested to see if there's a difference between us and San Antonio, where you were for the last few years. I enjoy walking.
Right.
I will get out and I will do some walking. But by the time late October, early November get here, and then pretty consistently from then on all the way up into April, it's really difficult for me to get out in my neighborhood and walk comfortably, safely. The weather is bad. The streets are slippery. It's dangerous to do that. So is there a bigger problem here than there is, for example, in San Antonio, where you can go out and walk pretty much year-round?
That's an interesting question, because here, what I've noticed from living here before, people transition their activities from walking in the neighborhood to perhaps snowshoeing or cross-country skiing. And so you do have to have a different strategy. You do have to layer. You have to be ready for the cold weather. In San Antonio, it's the heat that gets you. 6 months out of the year, it's so hot, it's almost impossible to exercise outside. Some areas of San Antonio have stray dogs. Some people, I ask, well, what's your barrier to exercising? Well, I don't want to be chased by a dog. These are some things we don't always
I haven't thought of yet, but I will put in my file to use.
San Antonio did have a little bit more of a problem with the stray animals than we have here.
Yeah, but we have mooses.
Yeah, go watch out.
See,
for the moose.
I could be chased by a moose while I'm out exercising, and we wouldn't want that.
You sure could. But yeah, there are challenges with the seasons, and I think the strategy that I've used is I have to have a couple of things in the winter that I like to do. And everyone who lives here knows that you can't just hide in your house all winter. You have to get out and enjoy the snow, however you do it. So if it's cross-country skiing, the two different versions of it, the skate skiing and the traditional skiing, they tell me it doesn't take a lot of skill to do the traditional, but I think basically what I do is I just get out and walk on the skis because I don't really understand how to do the skiing. But that's something that one who likes to walk could do, snowshoeing or cross-country skiing in the wintertime. Or get yourself a gym membership and get on the treadmill.
Or get your own treadmill.
Or get a treadmill, sure. Yeah.
Because some of those things that you buy really do work if you use them.
Well, that's the thing. You've got to enjoy using them. Walking is a terrific activity. As we age, we also need to worry about our skeletal health. And the mild impact forces that you get, the heel strikes when you're walking, helps maintain healthy bones, not only your cardiovascular and respiratory system. So it's a good option.
Really? I mean, explain that further.
Sure.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, as we age, we're going to lose bone mass. Irregardless, it occurs more in postmenopausal women because there's definitely a link between estrogen and bone mass. But males also and females who are not postmenopausal will slowly lose mass after about the age 30. And the way we can maintain that bone mass is by exercising, eating healthy also. But exercise creates these impact forces, and the impact forces actually signal the cells in your bones that that increase bone density. They say, here's a stimulus. We need to make sure we maintain bones. If you sit on the couch, you're going to lose bone mass.
If I sit on the couch and tap my foot with
it. Yeah, well, that'd be better than
this. I keep trying to get out of this because you're making me feel just really guilty about my lifestyle being here. And it's something I should do something about. And I'm not the only person in the Copper Country or across the United States who would be saying that, because this is not just our problem here.
Oh, no. It's I want to say across the United States. It's really bad in the United States. It is a problem across the world. Not all countries, of course. In the developed countries, we just have access to such great, tasty food. And food is an important part of our culture. Nobody wants to be told you can't ever eat a slice of pizza again because it's not good for you. You want to be able to eat the food that you like. And so the second half of this, the eat less part, doesn't mean diet. I'm not talking about telling people they have to just eat chicken breast and kale for the rest of their lives. They're not going to enjoy that. They're not going to be successful. But don't eat a whole pizza. Don't eat a whole pasty. Maybe share a pasty if you like pasties with someone. So the idea of this whole eat less is make a conscious effort to not eat as much as you normally would, or don't eat till you get full. Those are difficult things to do because when we're eating something we enjoy, you don't want to push it away and say, well, I'm done now. So try to, just smaller portion sizes of foods that you like. And believe me, less calories in coupled with some form of exercise and your body mass is eventually going to start to decrease, which is so good for you in so many different ways.
My sister and my late brother-in-law live in suburban Chicago. They're a member of a club that is called Run to Eat.
Uh-huh.
Basically, they started this club years ago, and it's a great group of people. I know a lot of them. It's a great group of people who basically go out running each day so that on Sunday they can have some desserts.
It's terrific.
Eat some things that they really like.
Terrific strategy because that helps them stay consistent.
Yeah, and it's great because, first of all, it's very social.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's fun for them. But let me ask you this. How much running do you have to do to run off that big meal?
One fat pound is equivalent to 3,500 calories. So that sounds like a lot. But if you run 500 calories per day, for 1 week, that's going to equal 3,500 calories, 7 times 500. So you should lose a pound of fat a week if you run off 500 calories. And that's going to vary from person to person. But in general, a mile usually costs you about 100 calories.
The ratio just seems to me to be you have to do a lot of work to work off
sure.
the pound that you gained.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I wish I remembered the equation. I'm supposed to be an exercise physiologist.
That's okay.
I don't remember.
I'm supposed to be a professional.
You know, you're right. If you take a look at a piece of cake, it has 500 calories in it. Okay, that takes you how long? Not too long to eat it, right? But you go to the gym, it's going to take you at least an hour.
It takes longer if I have a second piece.
Right. Rule of thumb, if you're exercising moderately intense, you can probably burn 500 calories in an hour. So think about walking on a treadmill for an hour or eating that slice of cake that takes you 30 seconds.
It puts it in perspective.
So it is. Dieting itself is not going to work. Exercising itself is not going to work. In general, for most people, it has to be a combination of push back from the dinner plate, maybe smaller portion sizes, but don't deprive yourself of things that you enjoy. I like to tell people, you know, there's no such thing as a bad food unless you have diabetes or some things you have to avoid. If you like it, you can eat it. Just don't eat as much as you would necessarily normally eat. And then go out and also burn some calories. So we're not talking about necessarily burning 500 calories a day through exercise. If you don't enjoy working out that much, you can decrease your amount of food that you eat by 250 calories and then go to the gym 30 minutes and burn 250 calories. You just need to try to get a 500 calorie deficit each day, be consistent with that. And the first law of thermodynamics tells us that you should lose a pound of fat a week.
Laws of physics are hard to break. Talking with William Cook, he is the Portage Health Foundation Endowed Professor at Michigan Tech. Let's talk a little bit about this program that has brought you here. Mm-hmm. The Portage Health Foundation really got a boost, of course, when the old Portage Health Hospital was sold and became UP Health System Portage. They got basically the money from the sale. And they put this into this huge endowment, and they have been using it for programs such as this around the Copper Country. So what is their goal in creating this position for you?
Yeah, there are five prongs that go along with the whole Portage Health Foundation initiative. My part is going to be community outreach and really giving Michigan Tech a collaborative face. We don't want the folks in the community to think the university is separate from the community. There kind of is a sense of that. The Portage Health Foundation wants to let the community know this is a partnership. It really is. They're truly interested in people living longer, improving their quality of life while they're here, but also getting them to know that this improvement in life can be coupled with health research. And at the university, there's been a huge push in the last couple of years for the health professions,
yes.
Biomedical engineering, my department of kinesiology and integrative physiology. We're learning more and more about how the body works. And when we understand how the body works and how it interacts with exercise or device development, all of these goals combined to increase the health and wellness of the community. And we're talking about not just Houghton, but the four counties, primarily the four counties of the Upper Peninsula, Western Upper.
What problems are we seeing now, particularly as people such as myself, I'll use myself as an example, mm-hmm. as we age and we're overweight and we haven't been in shape, what are the repercussions?
Yeah, so many things that can go wrong when you're overweight. It's not all linked to overweight, but overweight obesity is one of the major ones. It leads to diabetes, huge health problem, health concern. Leads to hypertension, which is a primary risk factor for development of cardiovascular disease and stroke. A lot of folks up here smoke, I've noticed. A lot more than I noticed in Texas. Some of them are switching to these electronic cigarettes, which is one of the areas of interest in my research. But we really don't know how safe those things are. But smoking cessation has got to be a goal. We've got to get people to quit smoking. That's the number one thing you can do to increase your lifespan.
Have we made any legitimate advances in therapy for that?
I'm not an expert in smoking cessation, but another really intriguing aspect of this position is the collaborative potential. And I'm hoping to work with the experts to see what I can do to push those types of initiatives. But the statistics that I've read, about 3 to 5% of people who seriously want to try to quit smoking actually are successful. And that's not a good number.
No, it must be. And that's one vice I never did pick up.
That's good.
I never never smoked. And I know people who do. And I know that many of them would like to stop. It must be a very, very difficult thing to do.
I've heard the quitting nicotine is harder than something like heroin. It's one of the most addictive substances on the planet. And that's why people smoke. People don't smoke because they want to get the carbon monoxide and the 3,500 carcinogens that are contained in combustible tobacco. They do it because they get addicted to the drug, the nicotine. And so that's why I'm a little off topic, but I really do want to focus on the vaporized nicotine, the electronic cigarettes. I know several people who have quit smoking. Sure, they're still addicted to nicotine, and no, nicotine is not harmless, but it has to be not as bad for you as these combustible products that are going to give you cancer.
That was going to be my next question, because we've heard a lot about this vaping that has become very popular in the last little while. I don't know a lot of people who do that, but when I was out of the area recently, I saw all sorts of people who were doing that.
It was really big in San Antonio. And as a health professional, I'm not going to come out and recommend that people do it. But I would say if you're a smoker, it's an option. And I believe that it is a healthier option. But the goal obviously would be to step down on the nicotine. So you can buy these nicotine gels or whatever they are at a certain concentration. And then periodically you can decrease the concentration that you're inhaling until you're really not inhaling any nicotine at all. But you're still getting that feel, it's psychological feeling of smoking.
Yeah.
So not that I wouldn't recommend that for anyone, but my other concern about this, the young folks who never would have picked up a cigarette, they never would have thought to smoke. It's kind of a neat hobby for people. It comes in all different flavors, berries, gummy bear, and that's enticing to young kids. I believe it's regulated. You have to be at least 18 to buy it, but think about these 18-year-olds who never would have picked up a cigarette, and now we're getting them addicted to nicotine through vaping. So it's not innocuous. It's not just some harmless little hobby. But the research needs to be done. That's one of my areas I'm interested in pursuing.
Yeah. Have they done a lot of research with this? Because
no.
100 years ago, there was no real feeling that cigarettes were a problem.
No, that's true. The research is lacking. In fact, I'm in the middle of writing a grant to NIH right now, and having a hard time finding anything on anything substantial on the effects of vaping on the cardiovascular system, which is my focus. There have been some papers showing that it increases your respiratory resistance, so it will make it harder for you to breathe because it attacks your epithelial cells in your trachea, and so it is not harmless. But most of the research right now has been on whether or not it's effective as a smoking cessation aid, the public health type of angle. And my angle is going to be from a physiology perspective. What's it doing to your cardiovascular system?
All right. I'm talking with Bill Cook. He is the Portage Health Foundation endowed professor at Michigan Tech. The concept is eat less, move more. The goal is to make all of us eat less and move more. How do you make that happen? How do you reach out, and what kind of programs are going to be established for this?
Well, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm talking to you about it. a lot of folks are going to listen to this radio show, and it might just get them thinking, you know, that doesn't sound like such a hard thing to do. Maybe I'll have a little less on my dinner plate tonight and take the dog out for a walk when they wouldn't normally do that. So a lot of these things that I'm doing right now, just becoming visible, getting people to know that these types of programs are important to Michigan Tech and Portage Health, going to community events and talking with people and answering their questions. That's the first step.
What kind of community resources are available to help with this? We talked earlier about how, we can get out a lot in the summer and be active. It's a lot harder to get out in the winter and be active. What resources are available?
I'll be honest. I've only been here a couple of months.
Okay.
So I'm still finding my way, but I know that Portage Health has a fitness center right up the hill here. There's a couple other fitness centers. The Student Development Complex is open for memberships for the the public. And you can probably guess, as an exercise specialist, I do push working out, and I do push structured programs. So don't think that the only thing you can do is go and walk around the block. If you enjoy doing that, that's great. But if you like the social aspect of going to a fitness center and having some more options about what you do, and you feel comfortable doing that, there are resources here in Houghton Hancock area for that type of activity. And the ski hill, the trails around here, there are so many opportunities when the weather is nice to get out and do something, and opportunities when the weather is bad. I'm really intrigued by these snow bikes. I haven't ridden one yet, but these new bikes with the great big wheels on them.
Oh, that just looks like work.
It looks like work, yeah, but that's sometimes work can be fun.
There are people who are enjoying it. It's a really growing activity
right
here in this area. For those who have not been active and are overweight and have not been exercising in any way, shape, or form, what steps should they take maybe before getting started with
right
activity? Should you go see your doctor? Are there things that you need to worry about?
Yeah, we absolutely always recommend getting some type of a basic physical and talking with your physician about getting active if you haven't been active for a while. There may be some things that are hiding that you don't know about. If you have, for example, high blood pressure and you don't know it, worst thing to do is to go start lifting weights. It's going to increase your blood pressure, at least during the activity. So yeah, if you haven't been active, I certainly would recommend getting a physical, talking with your physician about the types of things you're interested in. And they'll probably recommend starting with a walking program. That's normally the safest thing. You know, you don't want to jump on a bike if you haven't been on a bike for a while, or you're older, you don't want to fall off and break anything. So a safe route for walking would probably be the second step. But the first one, go see your doctor.
Is it helpful to connect with some kind of a coach or a trainer?
For some people like that motivation of having someone, or even just a friend. I mean, a friend to meet at a certain time every day. But if you really don't know where to start, you can't just start exercise. You know, you go into a gym, and most of the people who walk into a gym just look around and they follow what other people are doing. They have no idea how to put themselves on a program. So for those people, even a couple of sessions with a personal trainer, or consistently working with a personal trainer, they are trained to do that. That's one of the things we do with our students in our department. They get out understanding how to get people exercising safely and putting them on effective programs. So it works for some people. Some people just buy a magazine and start looking at exercise programs through that. But it all depends on what the person is comfortable with.
I'm sure there are plenty of training programs online.
Oh, sure.
Some I'm sure are excellent. Some I'm sure are absolutely worthless. Can you tell the difference?
The American College of Sports Medicine would be the one that I recommend. It's an organization, national organization, that certifies personal trainers. They come out with position stands based on research. The ones to avoid would be ones that don't have certification associated with them. You know, go look at Larry's blog on running or something like that. You really do need to get to an organization, and I'll just repeat the one that I recommend is the American College of Sports Medicine. It's acsm.org. You can find it online. A lot of great information about how to start exercising and appropriate programs to go on.
So what's your next step as you get this program rolling?
A lot of things I'm interested in. I do want to, and thankfully with the extra money that comes with the endowment associated with my position, I'm not going to necessarily always have to have an external grant to do the research I want to do, which is a terrific benefit. I obviously will go for external money, but I'm interested in smoking cessation, cardiovascular effects associated with vaping, but also I want to include exercise as an intervention, not just for helping people get healthy in the community, but for research. So before and after some exercise program, what's the influence of, say, circuit weight training on someone who has pre-hypertension or someone who's pre-diabetic, who doesn't know you know, what's going to happen to them if they continue on? Can we reverse someone who was eventually going to have high blood pressure, can we reverse that with exercise? Someone who is eventually going to be a diabetic, can we reverse it with exercise?
Obviously easier to prevent than to treat.
Yes, exactly. And that the whole goal, really nationwide, physicians are now understanding more about preventative medicine. Used to be you never see a doctor until you're sick. Go in and they'll give you something. But now physicians are really on board with preventing hospital visit in the first place. And that's where this collaboration, I think, really is going to be beneficial.
And that's going to have to wrap us up. I very much appreciate William Cook. He is back at Michigan Tech and working with the folks at the Portage Health Foundation to try to improve the health of the Copper Country, something that could have some very long-term positive benefits, not only for us individually, but for us as a society in general. Bill, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Our program brought to you by Lassla Insurance of Mohawk, and thank you for tuning in to Copper Country Today this week.